Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Brooklyn-based jazz pianist and composer Yvonne Rogers. Growing up in rural Maine, she often found herself alone with nothing but her imagination and the natural world around her for inspiration. One image that often returns to her mind's eye is the button jar that her artist mother kept for craft projects, a stockpile of mundane but multi-hued items that could be reimagined into endless creative permutations. The notion became a guiding principle for her 2026 album, The Button Jar. We dig into this new solo piano album and her career in the music. Produced by label founder Chris Davis, this introduction is a deeply personal weave of play and rigor that marshals childlike wonder in service of a complex and intricate use of rhythm and harmony. We cover the whole story. Enjoy this interview. Well, let's get into the music. It's great to meet you. Thank you for taking a minute out for the program today. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so let's begin our journey before we get into the button jar. I want to know, 6 years ago, this pandemic was changing everything, especially for musicians. Mm-hmm. How did you get through that era? And how has it changed the way that you create and approach life and music today?
Wow, that's a good question. I feel like I've sort of tried to forget all about
right.
that. It was interesting because I moved home to Maine. So I was back home, which was really, I mean, obviously it was a really stressful time in general. I mean, it wasn't, some people had a great time, you know, they were holed up doing their thing. I don't think that was my experience. I was pretty stressed the whole time. Yeah. But it did allow, like, because there's no performance opportunities, in a way it did allow for more like solo exploration. So for me, that meant like doing some multimedia stuff, and I got out my camera and I was doing some video stuff, and I don't know, just, I guess in a way it did allow more time to explore, like, because you couldn't collaborate, that part was like erased unless you're doing some sort of virtual thing. So it was an interesting time to explore like multimedia stuff and, okay, I'm here by myself, what can I do and what do I want to try that I wouldn't be able to try, or I wouldn't give the time of day in other circumstances, I guess.
And I think in a place that's dense like Brooklyn or even in New York, there was everybody's stacked on top of each other, so mm-hmm. it probably got to the point where there was like a couple weeks in, people were tired of there being all of these instruments playing all the time at odd hours.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I was just finishing school. Let's see, when was that? 2019. I can't even remember anymore. Yeah, but I was in Rochester at that point. I was at Eastman. So I wasn't even in New York. I was at school and they sent everyone home. But I can't imagine being in New York for that. Like, no way.
Well, I think the other byproduct of that time period I kept thinking was that all of the graduates that had amassed all of this knowledge and debt were walking into a place where there was no work.
Yeah.
So is there going to be a mass exodus away from this art form? But I think the opposite's happened. I think it's pulled more people in. I think it's just as vibrant as it has been before. Mm-hmm. What's your take on being on that cusp?
Yeah, I believe in what you're saying as well. Obviously, it's, in a sense, it's getting harder and harder for musicians and venues, and it's getting harder, but I do think that people are appreciative of just like interacting with other human beings, you know, making something that's real, that's right in front of you. And I think just like being in a room with other people and experiencing live music is really special. And that, I think people are really appreciative of that right now. Also in an era of phones and internet, and like, we're sort of getting separated from our communities. So I think music is a really special way for people to feel connected to other people in a room. So, and living in Brooklyn, like, there's new venues opening, and like, there's often people at my shows who don't, they're not musicians. They just walked by and thought they'd check it out. And I think that's really cool. So yeah. I'm hopeful. We'll see.
But. Well, I was too during that time thinking that we would kind of go back to this level of like you were saying, just this analog, kind of organic, more like I know jazz is kind of it symbolizes the beginnings of really the popularization of music, especially on the radio and the way that we took it in. I mean, at one point I went to a show, Bobby Watson. It was these Plexpod shows that we had, and it was all these cars would get in parking lots about 10 feet apart. You'd open the hatchback and everybody would do their thing. And I had a Downbeat shirt on at one point. Some dude, as I'm walking to concessions or something, says, "What's Downbeat?" And I thought he was joking with me. And I was like, It's a magazine. It's a jazz magazine. Oh, wow. Well, what's it about?" So we start talking, and he was there with his daughter, and they started listening to jazz over the pandemic on public radio. And it was that thing that I was hopeful for, that people were going to discover this thing that they wouldn't have discovered before, and it would hook them.
I believe in radio too right now. Like as I was saying, I'm sort of it's a bummer that we're so like we're tapped into this global community in the internet, which is cool, but radio feels really community centered. Like you're listening to something, you don't know what it is, but other people around you are listening to it too, and it feels like a really cool experience. So, all part of the same thing.
And I think that's why that's the reassuring thing about podcasting becoming so big, and it did over the pandemic, and it hasn't slowed down. So I think that more agrarian notion of like having a community built by antenna, is still alive and kicking. So let's get into the new album. Talk to me a little bit about what your vision was and how it feels on a visceral level.
Well, I have to say that I didn't set out to make a solo album and that I always kind of played around with these ideas, solo piano on my own, but I didn't take them very seriously. And as a pianist, like solo piano is terrifying, you know? Any pianist will tell you, I think it's it, you know, you're so exposed. So it wasn't something that I was intending to do, but Chris Davis really like she's been a mentor to me for a while and she's always known exactly how to push me and support me at the same time. So she kind of was like, I think you should do this, you know. So she's the one that put the idea in my head. And then I guess the idea was I struggled a lot. At first, I was like, okay, I need to come up with an entire new thing. Like, I got to come up with this from scratch. What am I going to do? And it was that felt like hitting a wall a little bit. But I had already come up with all these ideas, some during the pandemic and also after the pandemic. But when I'm practicing and I don't want to practice what I should be practicing, I'll just do these little sort of compositional explorations and I would come up with these ideas and I would finish them, sometimes post them online and then move on and totally forget about it. And Chris said, "Well, why don't you go back and revisit those and try to flesh them out and expand on that?" So that was the starting point. And then, so I think about half of the pieces I had already started writing in the past. And they were, what was special about them, I think, was that idea that they were kind of just for fun. Like I didn't have any intention. I didn't set out to be like, I'm going to write these for this project and I wanted to have this effect or anything like that. It was just pure whatever was coming out in that moment. So then I tried to hang on to that feeling as I was writing the rest of the pieces and have this kind of playful, explorative approach instead of putting too much pressure on trying to write things that would align with a certain theme or something. It was more just like trying to be as authentic as possible and just get out these ideas that were already kind of circling around in my head.
So what are you hoping the listener gets from this album?
That's a good question. I guess I hope that there's something in there for everyone because it's very, the pieces are very different from each other, in my opinion. And like the format is that there's 14 very short pieces, all very varied. So I hope that like everyone, no matter what sort of taste they have or musical genre they like to live in, that they can find something in there that speaks to them. And I'm also hoping that it can encourage that kind of playful approach. You know, I worked really hard on it and I take it seriously, but at the same time, I want to encourage people to kind of just be themselves, and, you know, you don't have to overthink it too much. I don't know. And that's kind of what the button jar, that idea symbolizes to me. It's like this jar of possibilities. Like, you could do anything with a button, you know, it can be functional, or you can stick it on something for fun, for a pop of color, or it's kind of a creative opening, I guess. Yeah.
And I think that's the key to all of this in the jazz world, is that it gets overthought. It gets over, I mean, there's a complexity, but there's also a simplicity to how good it makes you feel. And I think that it gets just overthought, and it gets to be seen as something bigger than it is. But there's a real, I don't know, there's just a real visceral nature to the music that hopefully people can, that's what I was hoping they would grab onto during the pandemic, was that they were going to find out that, you know, this organic music was not scary. It was inviting. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I think it's a balance, but I do think about that a lot. Like, often musicians, we're so focused on our craft and like looking inward and practicing and trying to see how we can be better. And I don't know, I want to think about the audience too, not in that I want to write things just to make them happy, you know, but I do want to invite them in somehow, whether that's just like how I interact with them in a live setting or musically. I guess I do really value that idea of invitation instead of pushing people away. So
yeah. So let's go back to your beginnings. You're from Maine originally.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get into jazz? And was music always going to be your destiny?
Definitely not. Yeah, I'm from a very rural part of Maine, in the woods on the coast. And my older brother played drums and he played piano. So, I mean, my parents don't play music, and there's no music happening in the woods in Maine. I mean, maybe in some places, but not really where I was. So I guess initially it was just I looked up to my brother. He played piano. I wanted to play piano too. So that was like the very beginning. But my high school happened to have a jazz program with a very passionate band director, Steve Orlovsky, who, I guess, yeah, he was a really big, if he wasn't there, there would be no jazz musicians from where I'm from. But there's a handful who came out of my high school just because he was such a passionate teacher. So that was really important. But because I didn't grow up around this music at all, it was very new to me. And when I was deciding where to go to school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I thought maybe I'll just try music because I like improvising and I had fun, you know, in the jazz program. I don't know. I didn't have a lot of confidence at that point. I was just like, I guess I'll try this. And then I got into the Eastman School of Music, and my teacher there was Gary Versace, who is an incredible pianist and an amazing teacher. So it wasn't until maybe like my third year of school working with Gary that I decided I actually wanted to be a musician, and that I even could do it. And he was also encouraging me to write music and do my own thing, because I think he saw that that's what I really wanted to do. And he was supportive of that, which I was really grateful for. So yeah, it wasn't until I was like maybe 20 that I thought I would be a musician. And I'm really glad I did. Yeah.
So what was the first live show you saw, jazz or otherwise, that made you think, I would love to do that, or it just blew you away?
I don't know if I can think of anything specifically.
Even albums, like what were seminal albums?
I have to say the Köln concert. I have to say that just because I remember, I think it was my teacher, my last year of high school, who showed that to me. And just the fact that Keith Jarrett could play an entire concert completely improvised was kind of mind-blowing to me, because I was like, as a kid, there you're just learning whatever Blue Monk, like you're learning all these classic tunes, and you're trying to learn how to play chords, and you're trying to learn how to solo and everything. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, here's this guy who played a whole concert totally free. And I thought that was amazing. So yeah, and I still remember that feeling. And yeah, I really love improvising, I think. And I love doing shows like that that are completely improvised as well. So yeah, that's definitely something I remember.
Yeah. So what do you like the best about being a professional musician? What gets you up every day? What motivates you? What pushes and impels you?
Well, a lot of different things, I guess. It's a good question, because from the outside, it's completely insane what we do. Like, just spending hours and hours working on music. And you certainly don't get much financially in return. So it's all about the other stuff. So yeah, I think for me, one of the most amazing parts about it is the community. And living here in Brooklyn, there's such a amazing community of people, and they're all so creative and unique and weird and funny. And I think musicians are just awesome. And it's also great to see how people influence and inspire each other. And you can go out and hear music every night. And I love going out to see music, even if I don't like it. I like going out to see shows that I don't like, because I learn something from it. And the people are still really cool, even if I'm not in love with what they do. So I guess, yeah, it feels very vibrant and human, and I really love being a part of that. And I also want to be a better musician. I don't know. So every day I have to work on music so I
Yep.
can, I don't know what it really means to be a better musician. Like, it's not something concrete that you can put into words. It's just something you're always trying to reach for. So, yeah.
I get it. So let me ask you this. Living in America right now is a stressful place. There's war, there's immigration, there's all of this stuff. We're just in the middle of a clown show. So my question to you is this: as a musician, the arts have always come in to save humanity. They've always been there. Music, the voices that we need, the artists. How are you processing this time period that we're living through? And how is that affecting the way that you're delivering music and giving people that level of escape from the headlines and what we're kind of seeing in this country that's unprecedented?
Yeah. It's hard to think about. I'm trying to educate myself as much as I can, but sometimes I reach this wall where I have to, stop listening or stop reading for a minute and get away from it. But yeah, I think, like I said before, I really believe in community, and just that music is a practice in gathering, and that you can get people together in a room and they don't know each other, they've never met, they don't know what you're about to do, but they're open to experiencing it. And I think that's something that there's like a lesson there of just being open to interacting with people that you don't know, basically, I guess, and trying to rebuild some sense of like belief in our community or something. I don't know. So I think like sometimes it really feels like I'm at a loss. Like, I don't know what to do, but I do believe that gathering people in a room is important. And also, like, yeah, investing in the people that you believe in and the people around you that are doing good things, and trying to be supportive of each other, I guess. I mean, it feels weird because in a way, if we feel so small and like powerless in the face of everything that's going on, but you just have to believe that music is worthwhile, I guess.
Yeah, I
And do
get it.
everything you can to support it. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally
Yeah.
get it.
It's a
So,
hard.
yeah, no, it's there's a lot to process, and but I think that definitely live music especially is very, very needed right now. It's a medicine for the mental health of this country and world. So let me ask you this. If you could hop into a time machine and go back in time and see one jazz concert, where are you going to go? What would you love to have seen?
I was just listening to Jerry Allen live at the Village Vanguard the other day, and I think I would have liked to see Jerry Allen in any setting. Just because, like, I remember when I first started listening to her, I didn't really get what she was doing. I was like, what is this? But what I could tell immediately with her was that she has this energy, and it's, you just feel like, I don't know how to explain it, but yeah, this authenticity and just aliveness. Like, her music is so alive, and you feel that in every note that she plays, and that's really special. So yeah,
Yeah.
never got to meet her, but I wish if I could go back, I would. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Everyone has a perception of you. Family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, everyone on the business end, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Whoa. Do I think I am? Wow. Wow. I don't know. I don't know what to say, really, but I do think a lot about where I'm from, and I think, I live in New York, and I've met a lot of people here, so people know me, I guess, as living in Brooklyn, but I'm from the woods in Maine, and I think that is a really has been a big impact on who I am, but also on my music too, because for better or for worse, and I think it goes both ways, like, I just didn't grow up around music, so I think in a sense, I have a lot to learn, but I also, there's something organic about that, maybe, that it just came from me playing in the woods, basically, like, I didn't have so many influences at a young age, except for the artists around me, like my parents, I guess. So yeah, I think like where I'm from is a big part of who I am, and I really miss it a lot, even though I love being here. Yeah.
Right on. So The Button Jar is the new album. If anybody wants to get a physical copy other than streaming it or download it or catch you live or any of the good business, where do they go?
Well, you can find the album on Bandcamp. That's the best place to buy music straight
Yes.
from the artist. So you can buy a CD or the digital album there. I have a release show next week, May 7th in Brooklyn, and I'm playing around New York City. It's all on my website. So
Okay. And I will fast track this and get this out to shout this from the mountaintops. It was great to meet you. Thank you so much for taking a minute. Best of
thank
luck with the
you.
release. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview. We give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Brooklyn, Kansas City, Maine, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Yvonne for her time and story. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.